The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Indeed it does. Live from the NASDAQ market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. A Tesla triumph, shares of the EV maker soaring on hopes for new models and better than expected margins. Was this the turbocharge the stock needs to get back on track? We're going to debate it. Plus, not so Gucci. The parent company of the luxury fashion brand seeing shares tank as it forecasts a massive drop in profit. Is this a sign that even the highest end consumer is starting to crack? And later, we're counting down to Meta earnings. The home builders lay a strong foundation, and Goldman Sachs posts a record close for the first time in more than 2 years. I'm Courtney Reagan, and this evening for Melissa Lee, we are coming to you live from Studio B at the NASDAQ. On the desk tonight, we have Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, Dan Nathan, and Guy Adami. But we got to start off with Tesla. Taking off on Q1 results, shares actually soaring. This is despite a miss on the top and bottom lines. Investors seemingly excited that the new models may be coming sooner than expected. If the gains hold tomorrow, it will be Tesla's best day since September. Hasn't had a lot of best days lately. CNBC's Phil LeBeau joins us now to break down the results. Phil, what happened here in this report?
Well, it's what they said in the indication of new models that are coming, new more affordable priced models. That is exactly what the street wanted to hear. The street didn't really want to see what they saw for the first quarter. And let's go over those numbers. None of these numbers are good. Any way you look at it, this was an ugly quarter for Tesla. Earnings miss, 45 cents a share. The street was expecting 51 cents. Revenue down 9% year over year, the worst since 2012. It fell short of estimates, coming in at $21.03 billion. Operating margin of 5.5%. Negative free cash flow of $2.53 billion. Yeah, it was ugly any way you look at the first quarter. But then Tesla put out its future outlook, which is, you know, not always the clearest, but this time they were pretty clear, saying that they will accelerate new model launches, including more affordable vehicles. Leave that to your interpretation, whether or not you see one coming in at $25,000 or just a little more affordable than what we see with the Model 3 right now. Start of production likely in the second half of 2025. But it's clear when you read the note from the company in the earnings release, it is clear they are moving quickly to roll out newer models. By the way, delivery growth notably lower in 2024 than 2023. And I think last year the delivery growth was something like 18-19%. Notice that's not total deliveries, it's delivery growth. So the street's expecting 1.9 million vehicles to be delivered this year, guys. We'll see if that's going to be the case. We'll see how second quarter develops here. We know what the first quarter was when it was down 8.5% year over year. Guys,
Bill, I don't mean this to be a trick question, of course, because it's always hard to predict Mr. Musk, but any indication of what we might be hearing on the conference call when that does kick off?
Well, I think one of the main questions is going to be, how many vehicles are you looking at in terms of accelerating the development of? When you say more moderately priced vehicles, are we talking something substantial? They plan to incorporate the current existing lineup of vehicles as they roll out these newer ones. They want some clarity. That's what the analysts are going to be looking for. By the way, with regard to Robotaxi, there is one sentence in the release at the bottom in terms of the development of Robotaxi, simply saying that they will continue the development of this. Remember, August 8th is when they have said we will unveil the Robotaxi or give more details regarding the Robotaxi. No doubt that conversation will happen to a certain extent tonight during the call, but I think most of the call's questions will focus on the development of these newer models.
Awesome, Phil. Thank you very much. Keep us posted on what you hear. We'll come back to you. All right, let's trade this one. Dan, I mean, why is the stock higher? Okay, so we maybe have an acceleration of the new vehicles, but everything else is kind of a mess.
Yeah, and it likely is just because going into the print, it was down 30% in the last, you know, 5-6 weeks. I mean, think about the magnitude of this sell-off in market cap terms, given everything that we've known since their Q1 delivery estimate that came out, and it was a massive miss. And I think a lot of investors just said, you know, shoot first, ask questions later. When you look at this report, I mean, Phil just said it, the quarter was not good, and there's nothing that actually leads you to believe that they're going to be turning the tide from a fundamental standpoint this quarter in Q2, and maybe not even in the back half of 2024. So to me, it just seems like, you know, stock got really nailed into the print, and it's kind of releasing. Listen, this call hasn't even started yet. I mean, the fact of the matter is this stock could be down in an hour or so, given, you know, like the Q&A is going to be fairly combative. Just go look on Twitter over the last few weeks or so. The bulls are eating themselves alive right here. The Q crowd doesn't even have to do any of the work anymore because they have kind of turned on each other.
Yeah, I mean, obviously stock's higher, but down, what, 40% so far this year? And to your point, we're going to hear a lot more on the call. Karen, what about the negative free cash flow? Does that bother you at all?
Well, I'm not long, so it doesn't really bother me very much. But, no, I mean, there's so many things to not like here, right? Yeah. And it seems like what's happening is, okay, don't look at this. Let's distract you and talk about the things that we know you want to hear. You want to hear about a lower price model. So let's talk about that. I think, did Phil say it was second half of 25? So that's a long way off. As Dan said, I think, you know, the bigger event is in 24 minutes, which is the conference call, and sort of anything can happen. I mean, they have sort of, they haven't been wildly bullish in the last few weeks about anything, really.
Right.
Certainly the stock investors haven't, but I don't think the company has either. So I don't know. I think it seems to me very odd, this communication of we are getting rid of the lower priced car, right? This is maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, and we're going all in robo-taxi. And I don't know if now this is, are they pulling back on that just because that's what they think the street wants to hear? Or is that, in fact, really the direction they are going? I don't know. That will be important on the call.
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, Phil said there was just one line in the release about the robo-taxi, so we have a lot more questions. Tim, I mean, delivery growth notably lower this year than last year.
Well, again, no surprises on that. Yep. And I think we priced this in. And I think, you know, you can go to the headlines. The headlines are pretty shocking. It's their first year-over-year quarterly decline in revenues in 4 years. And it tells you this is the growth company with the growth multiple that doesn't grow. Model 2 lives. So it's a little bit of, to me, Dan's right, let's listen to the call. It's a little bit of like the hocus pocus, nothing up my sleeve. While we talk about this, there's something going on over here. And I think that's exactly what's going on here. Meanwhile, it's kind of ironic. Maybe, you know, lower price models, meanwhile, their existing models are going lower too. They're cutting prices. They cut prices more over the weekend. The one thing that the analyst community can look at in terms of margins is where the software adoption, the FSD adoption, because it's very accretive to margins, they're cutting prices there too. What's that going to mean? Well, it might be ultimately actually positive for overall margins. But I just think that there was not any expectation here. That's why a 6% is kind of a let's call this a relief rally. I don't think, and we've discussed this probably for the last 3 months, certainly since we got the delivery cuts in some sense that these numbers were going to be so poor a few weeks back, is that there's not a lot of great news for Tesla until we get, and as we've said tonight, into the second half of 25.
Guy, when you look at the chart, we're so far off from even recent highs. I mean, what would it take to get us there? Is there a trade here?
I don't think we're getting there to recent highs, number one. But we did hold a support line. I think Carter Worth actually talked about it last night over the last week or so. We traded right down and bounced off a level that we should bounce at. But in terms of levels, I mean, this is just another bounce that we've seen a number of times over the last 6 to 9 months. And my sense is this is going to be faded as well. And just for context, in terms of free cash flow, the street was looking for positive $650 million. It came in at obviously negative $2.5 billion. I mean, that's a pretty wild swing. And margins were not good. Margins continue to deteriorate. I think what the street took away was the fact, as Dan, Tim, Karen said, oversold condition, yes. Robotaxi may be faster than people expect. And I actually think that maybe the fact that they didn't sell any Bitcoin sort of played into this as well. But no reasons to be overly enthusiastic, I don't think.
Dan, what about, you know, the reduction in the labor force, some of the executive turnover, any of that cause for concern as we look forward?
The reduction in labor force is good if you're shipping less cars. You know what I mean? That's good. So right size that.
Yeah.
The problem is that over the last year or so, over the last couple of years, they've had a lot of really senior leadership turnover. I think a couple of the gentlemen who left in the last month or so had been there for 18 years or something like that. So when you think about this, and this is something that, again, going back to the Tesla bulls, and I think some of them are starting to say, okay, wait, This guy was the CEO of a company that just a couple weeks ago was $600 billion market cap company, right? Mm-hmm. He's the CEO of SpaceX, which is probably the highest valued private company in the entire world right now, right? And then you think about Neuralink, you think about Twitter, you think about a whole host of other things that we don't even know what's going on. It just doesn't make any sense anymore. Mm-hmm. This company is facing an existential crisis as it relates to their own infrastructure. That doesn't mean about the shift towards EVs, okay? But this is the first year that we've seen, Tim's point, we're seeing year over year revenue declines and delivery declines, and they've never faced that because they've owned the market. Mm-hmm. Now in one of their biggest markets, which is China, they have competition from everywhere. And a year ago, if we said that on this show, people looked at you and they'd call you an idiot. You don't get what you're doing here. And you know what? BYD is shipping $20,000 cars. And Tim's point is a great one. They're $35,000 car is getting into the 20s because of their price cuts, and that's why the margins are going where they are. So to me, it seems kind of uninvestable if you just think of this as an auto company. And I know you guys probably have plenty to say about what GM just reported, and that's the important part.
Well, GM, and so they've also kind of cautioned on margins maybe in the second half of the year because of rising EV production and deliveries. So, but GM was up 4.5% today. This is GM that actually beat and raised, great output. And it does look like we know there's competition. It's just interesting. I'm not here to tell you that GM is the major competition for Tesla here. And in fact, I think we've all said that there's been this dynamic where people think maybe GM and Ford are more, certainly a Toyota are more, you know, game on in hybrids. But either way, it does highlight where you've got obviously a traditional OEM where you've got a real revenue but a real margin story and a company that's never been more profitable in GM. And that's the name that I think you stay long. I think you know, we can talk about that or we cannot. Either way, I think that's a company where I think the trend, both of the chart and the fundamentals, is on your side.
We've got a little bit more on Tesla's results. Let's bring in Fast Money friend Gene Munster of Deepwater Asset Management. Gene, it's great to have you here. What are your thoughts here? We know the conference call hasn't kicked off and we only just have the releases, so still a lot of questions percolating. But what's top of your mind here?
Well, I think what it's come down to is there's a question. Is Tesla smoke and mirrors or is it substance? And I think the results this quarter are going to give evidence for the smoke and mirrors camp to think that this is just another car company. And I think that there is really little to be gained. I think one thing to be gained is that margins are declining, but they're not plummeting. They actually did a little bit better than expectations, still on the decline, but a little better than expectations. So they're going to survive. They got $26 billion in cash, but this ultimately comes down to is, do you believe? If you believe that the future is going to be hybrid cars and it's going to take a long time, 20 years to get to full electrification, stock's not going anywhere. If you believe that electrification, despite all of its troubles now, are going to accelerate for multiple reasons, and you believe in the concept of autonomy and robotaxi and that they're actually going to get this out, Tesla's probably the best position. They are the best positioned company to deliver on that future around autonomy and electrification. It's a big market, $2.5 trillion market, the smartphone market, $600 billion. And so I think that's what this ultimately comes down to. As the panel has said, stock, it's going to move based on what happens on the earnings call at this point, some commentary. I still think the street numbers are coming down for 2024 on delivery, so I think that could pressure the stock tomorrow. But ultimately, this company is going to survive to see this next generation vehicle and to see FSD and see the rising tide of electrification. So I'm still a shareholder. I'm still optimistic. And I think that I just believe in what they're doing from an innovation standpoint.
Do you think the stock movement is justified based on what we got from the release, just on the next gen vehicles and perhaps better than expected margins when everything else was pretty crummy?
No, it's understandable. I mean, you can reason why it's up because people are so desperate for any good news. And given the Reuters reporting more recently that they're canceling this initiative on the 2025 initiative, the fact that they're moving it up, that is a directional positive. But again, I think that 2024 is a throwaway and stock could keep going down. It could be flat. If you, again, believe in a future of electrification, Tesla's the best positioned company. But as far as this results, My guess is that stock probably fades in the next 2 weeks, finds its ground, and then as we get closer to 25, starts to rebound.
Hey, Gene, it's Tim. So can we reframe the kind of the investment rationale in terms of either what we're talking about, a fair value, whether we're talking about growth versus something? And I can appreciate the dynamics here, which they are so far ahead. It's a technology company. But it does get back to that that juxtaposition to they're not GM, but at the same time, they are an auto company. Can you talk about that multiple in Tesla and why you can stand behind that?
So I believe that this should trade at a similar multiple ultimately to Apple. I think that what they're doing around hardware and software, autonomy as a service, I think justifies that type of a multiple. And when you right now, the multiple stock's going down because earnings are going down. But on a revenue multiple, I think that that is justified. And so why is that justified? It's because we get back into a growth phase. Investors tend to look more at revenue growth than they do at earnings growth. And so if you just to kind of put it all together, if you build a case that they can grow revenue at 20, 30, 40% as they come out of this trough and do a 7 multiple on that, the numbers, you can get to a stock that's double where it is today. And so that's where I get it, is a belief that the growth is going to reaccelerate. And why do I believe growth is going to reaccelerate? Because I think it's an undeniable truth around electrification. I think traditional auto is making some grave mistakes in terms of slowing, which is an advantage for Tesla longer term.
Gene, it's Karen. Thanks for being on today. What do you think the math is around robo-taxis? How do you think about it? What is the model there?
So it's pretty powerful. If, again, you have to believe. It's like a religion. If you believe that this is going to get out, I happen to be in the camp that I think that they will eventually get this out. I think, by the way, Lyft and Uber, they're in big trouble if, in fact, Tesla does get this, because anyway, I think that that's a whole different topic. But as far as the impact, we have, they're going to do, call it 2 million vehicles, more or less. If you get to, just for easy math, 1 million robo-taxis, a lot of those are going to be Tesla-owned. They're actually going to own their own taxis. Some of them will go to third parties. But if you get to that million and assume about 3 rides per day, you effectively can double the operating income. Now, I was just talking about the importance of revenue, but I think that that is the math. So that's about $10 billion per year. They did last year about $9.5 billion in operating income. That's with 1 million robo-taxis. So that's a lot of them, but that's where you start to get it. The beautiful thing about it is there's a waterfall factor. As you continue to add those cars, the impact to the robo-taxi fleet continues to compound.
Gene Munster, thank you so much for joining us. We'll check in with you when the call starts. Dan, I'm going to give you the final word here as Tesla shares up 8% on the back of this crummy report.
Yeah, I think it's going lower. I mean, listen, I don't. If you're buying this thing for robo-taxis in 2 or 3 years, push that expectation out. And then the other thing is Uber and Lyft. We spent the last 5 years litigating the fact those companies can't own the cars. It's a disaster. If you think the unit economics suck already on rideshare, have the companies own the cars.
That's a financial term, by the way. That's a financial term.
No, yeah, but you understand, I'm sorry. We got Connor over there. It's a family show here a little bit. No, but my point is like, and Gene and I talk to Gene a lot. I love him and I love his work and I love his optimism about some of these big mega trends. I just don't believe that you will be buying this stock. I think robotaxi could be huge 5 or 10 years from now, but if they own 1 million of their own cars, it's going to be I just don't believe that's a good business.
He's an evangelist, you're not. I get it. Meanwhile, stocks continuing their rebound during the regular session, with the Nasdaq leading the gains up over 1.5%. The S&P also rising for a second straight day, while the Dow is now up 4 days in a row. JP Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon speaking at the Economic Club of New York earlier today, saying that the U.S. economy is unbelievable and booming, but warning that stagflation could re-enter the market and that current geopolitical situation is more complicated than it's been since World War II. He also had some advice for whoever wins the election in November.
I want the next president, whoever it is, to put the other party in their cabinet. That's what I'd like to see. So if it's Biden, then he put some Republicans in his cabinet. If it's Trump, he put some Democrats in his cabinet. I would like to see practitioners go back to government, like all of us, like not me, but you, to go help, and serve.
Karen, you were at the event. What did you make of Diamond's comments?
Well, he's pretty feisty. I thought it was interesting. You don't get a lot of economists to clap, but they did seem to like that bipartisan, which is something he's been talking about for a long time. He was more optimistic, I think, than his letter sounded. The economy is doing pretty well. So, I love JP Morgan, love Jamie Dimon.
I know.
I'm long.
People pushing him probably to be that next president at that event, of course.
Yeah, he said only if he's anointed.
Yeah, there you go. Speaking
of, might be.
I know, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't put it past any of us, right? Well, coming up, we will get more on Tesla's quarter when their conference call starts later this hour, what, about 11 minutes from now. And there are even more earning movers on deck. Shares of Texas Instruments, Visa, both on the move after reporting. Those details are next. Plus, Gucci's not so glamorous report, the parent company forecasting a major drop in operating profit. So, is it time for the retailer to tighten its belt? We'll debate when Fast Money returns.
You're watching Fast Money here on CNBC. We'll be right back.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Wouldn't it be great to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one place? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, makes it easy. I use it to put my investment account and 401k accounts into one hub and get expert tips that help me confidently manage my money. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Let's get you a few more earnings results out after the bell. Let's start with Texas Instruments. Christina Partsinevelis has those numbers for us. Hi, Christina.
Hi. Well, Texas Instruments, often considered a bellwether for the chip space, given its exposure to everything from cars, fridges, and electronics. And today's earnings report shows Q2 revenue as well as EPS guidance that falls in line with estimates, which is a bigger deal for TI considering expectations were so low going into this name. That's why the stock was down 3% as of the close on the year. Many calling for a bottom, and that appears to be the case in Q1. Yes, it was a beat, but revenue decreased 16% year over year. Revenue specifically declined across all end markets. Industrial down 25%, auto down low single digits year over year. Comms equipment down 50%. There's actually only one segment, and that's what they said on the call, personal electronics, the only one up in Q1. Similar trends, though, that we saw from Taiwan Semi very recently. On the earnings call as well, the CFO warning, quote, don't expect a significant or even any drain on inventory for Q2, implying Texas inventory amounts will remain high. But investors are optimistic. You can see that in the share price up 6%, maybe on this bottoming out process and the guidance that came in line.
Very interesting stuff. Christina, thank you so much. Guy, you find that one kind of interesting? I mean, all revenue segments are lower. A lot of disappointment there. Quarter coming in line, but shares up 6%.
Expensive stock. It's probably north of 30 times now. Makes sense technically if you look. I mean, we talked about this in the fall. Traded down about 148 was a low that we made 2 years prior. But this stock has been nowhere since the fall of 2021, like many stocks. I mean, it's been sideways to slightly low ever since. I mean, can you still rally maybe up to 180 or so? Yeah. Second quarter guide wasn't particularly great. I think, again, like we're seeing with Tesla, to compare a relief rally in a stock that I guess people are trying to find value in. I think it's expensive.
Tim, doesn't really seem like the stock's done much, what, in the last 4 or 5 years there? Look at that chart. Well, I guess 5 years up.
Well, it hasn't. And if you think about where we were kind of right in the middle of a lot of supply chain dynamics, especially with autos, especially around chips, I mean, this was a nightmare for the auto space. Part of that, I think, is where just Texan really lost that period. It's obviously not at all giving you any of the AI boom. It's a company that I think trades more like a commodity, and it actually is as cyclical as chips often is. This one is that.
Interesting stuff. Meanwhile, Visa moving higher after reporting a top and bottom line beat after the bell. Let's go to Kate Rooney for those details. Hi, Kate. What are you seeing?
Hey there. Yeah, Court. So Visa is really shrugging off any concerns about the slowing economy and inflation. The beat was driven by strong payments growth, CEO Ryan McInerney calling it stable consumer spending. Consumers looking good, according to Visa, also reiterating its guidance, looking for low double-digit revenue growth for the year. That was really what investors were looking for going into the print today. Revenue grew about 10% in the quarter. Payments volume was up 8%, while cross-border volume was up 16%. That tends to be a gauge of international travel, so that was strong. U.S. volume was up 6% year over year. International payments, meanwhile, that volume was up 11%. Also highlighted some renewed co-branded airline agreements, Alaska, for example, and then its credit card with Robinhood. Talked a lot about partnerships on the call. Visa and MasterCard also announced this $30 billion settlement with merchants during the quarter, and they agreed to cap interchange fees. So those are the card swipe fees. The company addressing that in the release, saying that attorney's fees and other expenses provided in that settlement, those will be paid from an existing fund in the litigation escrow account. No mention of any sort of impact on earnings, Court. Back to you.
Yeah, that was a big discussion during the quarter. Kate, thanks so much. Let's trade these results. Dan, what do you think about Visa?
Yeah, just impressive. Definitely. And when you think about some of the things that we might have heard from JP Morgan, American Express, Wells Fargo, about like some softening demand in some pockets as it relates to the consumer, but it wasn't anything I think that was driving the action in those stocks last week, you would have looked to see if transaction volume was like slightly softer here. This stock sold off 7.5% into the print. The fact it's only up 3% on those results. I don't think that's like such a ringing endorsement. I don't know.
Karen?
Well, I mean, this company has been just a powerhouse for years, and it trades at a, you know, a decent multiple to the market, but I think it deserves it. And there's nothing in this release that would make me think, all right, now's the time to sell it.
Right.
Right? I mean, they have an extraordinary business. We'll see. I'm not fully sure what the impact of those new caps and charges will be. Right. But I also did like the cross border. That's good. That's good earnings for them, right?
I was thinking
a good margin. Yeah.
Yeah, the cross border.
I was just going to say they also cut client incentives. So I mean, this was a number where they it does show underlying strength in their core business, as we've all said. And you can look at those year over numbers on processed transactions up 11%. I do think that the consumer is in a really healthy spot, but it is you also a day when you had PMIs that were very mixed. And if you look at the services side of our economy, this is a place where I think people are starting to get some concern.
Well, coming up. Lacking in luxury, Gucci's parent company expecting a sharp drop in one key metric. This is China demand falls short. More on how Gucci dropped the bag. That's coming up next. Plus, Goldman Sachs setting a record close as the stock continues its climb after earnings last week. So will the bank bump continue? We'll debate that ahead. You're watching Fast Money live from the NASDAQ market site in New York City's Times Square. We're back right after this.
For more than a decade, Comcast has been committed to bridging the digital divide and connecting millions to affordable high-speed internet. But the barriers to get connected go well beyond affordability. Through Project Up, Comcast is committing $1 billion to reach millions with digital skills training, resources, and opportunities needed to succeed in a digital world. Project Up, building a future of unlimited possibilities. Learn more at comcast.com/projectup.
Welcome back to Fast Money. The Tesla conference call is just getting underway. The stock is up by 8%. We'll see if we can hang on to that. We are dialed in. We will bring you all the headlines as we get them. But first, shares of French luxury good giant Kering dropping 8.5% after the company warned it expects a 40 to 45% decline in operating profit in the first half of 2024. Gucci, which is the company's biggest revenue maker, saw sales decline 18% due to weakness in China. Karen, you've been watching this name. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is very interesting. And also LVMH's results were okay, not great.
They were good enough, yeah. Right? After the concern, when Karen dropped a bomb 6 weeks ago, whenever it was, and said, our revenues are going to be down by 20%, I think it was.
Right.
Gucci actually came in a tiny bit better, but there's been a lot of discussion about Karen being in disarray. And then Henri Pinault, or the son, actually, bought a controlling stake in CAA, which seemed like a very odd sort of distraction.
Right.
Right? And so there was enough upheaval in the company that people were getting fairly concerned. I think that this is a very Gucci-specific problem.
Okay.
And so to me, I mean, LVMH didn't trade down on these results at all. So I think and LVMH's quarter was good enough. And I think we're starting to see more Chinese travel. I think the Gucci The Gucci is not speaking to their customer right
now. The chief financial officer told journalists that the Chinese market is fairly polarized between appetite from clients for the very high end or more affordable products, and Gucci is more positioned in the middle, so not benefiting from the polarization, which was a little troubling.
Gucci's in the middle? Yeah. I don't know. Guy, you wear a lot of Gucci.
No, Guy actually switched to Tom Ford. That might have been kind of the problem for them.
That was it.
He's back in the day.
He's not responding.
I think I get you back.
That was the heyday. That was Gucci. Tom Ford.
I have nice Gucci. As a matter of fact, I have a nice pair of shoes on, right?
Yeah.
Excuse me?
Nice Gucci loafer. No, it's not loafers. It's just one.
Loafer.
Like, you see what they do, Courtney? See what happens here?
I know.
I'm always the. I sit here. I'm drinking my water. I'm always the sort
and
of the target
sudden,
of their
it's
abuse.
It's just all about you.
Yeah. It's all about me.
All about you.
I'll say this real quick. I think Karen's right. I mean, this stock, it's been a disaster now for the last 3.5 years. So this is stock company specific for sure. You'd like to make some correlation in terms of consumers. I don't think that's necessarily what's going on here. Look at a long-term chart. It's probably down, 65-70% from its all-time high.
Yeah, I just say this, though. If you're thinking about China and you're thinking about some of the numbers we're hearing, I think Bloomberg had a story out today that Apple iPhone orders in China are down 19%. That is a high-end aspirational purchase for most Chinese. And so, again, it goes from super luxury to aspirational kind of mid-market sort of stuff. China's a disaster. We know it. And I think some of these brands are doing better with those dynamics than others.
Yeah, I think the China piece is very interesting, something we need to keep watching. Well, coming up, the bank trade, Goldman Sachs continuing its surge since its big earnings beat last week. But can the run continue? And how should you handle the financial sector? That's coming up next. Speaking of earnings, we're looking ahead to Meta results. Those are tomorrow. How options traders are logging into the name ahead of the report when Fast Money returns.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks continuing their rebound, the Dow jumping 263 points for its fourth day of gains in a row. The S&P up 1.2% and the tech-heavy NASDAQ leading the gains up more than 1.5%. And IBM reportedly nearing an acquisition of cloud software provider HashiCorp, which could be announced in the next few days. This is according to the Wall Street Journal. HashiCorp surging nearly 20% on that report. And shares of Spotify cranking higher today, up more than 11% and notching its best day since 2022. After results came in above expectations this morning. That stock now up 62% this year after recently raising streaming prices and laying off 17% of its workforce. Dan, what do you think is Spotify?
Pretty astounding when you consider just how poorly Netflix acted to that huge subscriber beat. This is a company that beat paid subscribers 14% in the quarter. They have basically 240 million. Think about this. And total subscribers, 615 million. We can't look at too many digital companies across the world that have over that many subscribers here. So they're cutting costs, they're raising prices, and the margins are getting better. That's why the stock is up.
And you know what else they allow you to do, Guy? You can make playlists, like multiple playlists. You don't have to put all your songs in one.
For context, I was just telling Courtney that I have an 800 and now 67 song Spotify playlist, and she said, that's not a play, like, that, of course it's a playlist.
No.
But you said you're supposed to, like...
You divide it by,
it's
like,
it's a library.
Yes.
It's a library.
It's a library.
It's a library.
That's not a playlist.
I mean, I want to get the terminology. Let's get it down. Because, I mean, you know, we do this in stocks. Let's
this is a really good point.
So when you do your next Iron Man, is that what you're going to listen to?
I might do one, by the way. No, you're not allowed. You know me. I like to be self...
You can listen. Not an
all deprivation. Okay. You've flown with me. You see, I stare straight ahead.
Now, how do you listen to Spotify on your 8-track tape player?
Very difficult. Good point by you,
really
Tim.
Really tricky.
It's challenging.
Really tricky. Okay, so Goldman Sachs with a new record close today, passing its previous best setback in November of 2021. The company posted a monster earnings beat last week. It's now up nearly 10% this year. So are the banks the next area for investors to dive into? I know it's not as exciting as tech, but what do you think, Tim?
Well, I don't say if it's the next. I'd say it's certainly been the place to be over really some from that inflection in the market. It's been a combination of, I think, a stronger economy, less labor market erosion. As long as we have payroll numbers that hold where they do, interest rates higher. And I know the money center banks were disappointing in terms of the net interest income. But you know, Goldman Sachs, first of all, it's a combination of them really doing it, I think, on both sides of the you know, offense and defense, shall we say. Now, there's a two-way player here. You got a dynamic where you've got across the entire platform, especially debt capital markets really coming back. You're seeing actually their ability to give back capital. But on the efficiency side and cost side, a 60.9 efficiency ratio puts them, you know, near the top of where they've been. So I think you're staying in this bank trade. Now, let's not remember. I mean, the market overall has had a decent couple days. On Friday, it felt like some of these trades that had a big day were places you wanted to take some profits. So Goldman's hardly cheap. And again, it's been such an extraordinary relative value play, I think. And even over its peers like Morgan Stanley in the investment banking and in the broker space, Goldman, as usual, has been the class.
Karen, do you have thoughts on Goldman? We were talking about JP Morgan earlier.
Yeah, I mean, Jamie, I want to be in the money center banks. I mean, they're somewhat of a different animal, obviously, much more trading oriented and advisory work. They trade the same multiple, JP Morgan and Goldman. I'd just rather be there. I like also their positioning when you look at them versus Bank of America and that held to maturity, which Bank of America was so offsides. JP Morgan got it so right. Rates seem to be staying higher for longer, which I think will help them. I like it here, but I liked it going into earnings, and it's down from there, but I'm staying long.
All right.
If Goldman's making new highs, Morgan's going to play a little catch-up. Morgan's still off of those 2021 highs. Both had really good quarters. And again, like some of the issues that you saw in the money centers and some of the things in the held to maturity. And again, you know, like this is the craziest thing. Did you guys see the article in the FT this morning? I mean, rate hike bets are starting to work their way into the futures markets here, right? And the options markets. And that's not something that anyone had on their bingo card coming in this year. So I just think about that. What are some, you know, what are some financial institutions that are going to do okay in that? I'd probably rather be in some of the investment banks, especially if it's a signaling better than expected economy, because a lot of that pent up demand for the IPOs, for M&A and all that sort of stuff, I mean, that's where Goldman and Morgan should benefit.
Fair enough. Well, coming up, a trio of fast movers for you tonight. We'll dig into the numbers and the moves from Pepsi, Pulte, and GE. That's after the break. Plus, Meta on deck, the social media giant, getting ready to report earnings tomorrow after the bell. We'll dive into the options pits to find out what they're expecting. That's right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Let's check back in on Tesla. The stock is now higher, even more so than we were before, higher by more than 9% as this conference call continues. Gene Munster of Deepwater Asset Management joins us again to dig into the details. Gene, tell us what you've been hearing. What's new on the call?
Well, what's new? Elon started it by saying the timing, to giving some more context on the timing of this next generation vehicle. Still unclear if it has a steering wheel or a robotaxi, but he said expect it early in 2025 or potentially late this year. I think late this year, the probability of that is slim to none, but that did cause shares to move from being up about 8% to up about 9.5%. So the market liked that. There's some quick context. Again, there was talk a few weeks ago that this whole initiative was going to be paused, and now they're talking about this being accelerated. And so I think that that has been the pivotal point on the quarter, on the call so far.
All right, giving us a timeline, even though maybe unbelievable. You got those believers out there. Thank you, Gene. Moving on to Pulte Group, the home builder also beating those earnings and revenue estimates, seeing a boost in demand from housing shortages in the United States. Those continue. CEO telling CNBC earlier today that the company is also attracting new buyers by offering lower mortgage rates. Take a listen.
The most powerful tool that we have right now is our forward mortgage rate commitments. And in fact, that's what we're offering as our primary national incentive. Right now, new home buyers can obtain a 5.75% 30-year fixed rate, which is a really incredible deal for buyers.
Well, 30-year fixed rates are currently hovering near 7.4%. Tim, are you still in Pulte?
No, and I guess I'm someone that's been at least critical of this last, you know, 20% or so in the home builders. I actually just think I get where the home builders, first of all, are in a great position to be feeding into that demand. I get where they can actually take some of the bite out of the mortgage prices and find other places to price it in. I just think we're in an environment where ultimately higher rates are going to continue to be an issue. I just think the move in the home builders overall since that inflection when rates topped back at, you know, 5% back in October, you've had it, you know, over a 60% move in home builders. And I don't want to buy that.
Fair enough. Well, now on to PepsiCo. Shares closing almost 3% lower despite a top and bottom line beat. Product volumes coming under pressure in the quarter as consumers push back against higher snack and drink prices and as the company deals with Quaker Oats product recalls. Karen, what do you make of this one?
I haven't owned this in a while. I mean, they always do a great job, but it does trade a little bit of a market a premium to market multiple. Not crazy. I guess I just feel like if inflation abates, that actually inflation was helpful to them, mm-hmm. right? They could raise prices more than prices actually went up. And right. so I feel like hopefully that we're on the other end of that. So no position here.
Okay. Well, coming up, less than 24 hours until Meta's first quarter report. We'll take a deep dive into the option pits to see how the traders are positioned. This ahead of the print, of course. That's coming up next. And here's a sneak peek at the Cramer Cam. Jim's chatting exclusively with the CEO of Nucor on the back of their earnings last night. Catch that full interview, of course, at the top of the hour on Mad Money. But we've got a lot more Fast coming back up in 2 minutes. Let's get one more check on Tesla. Trading near after hours highs here. I'm trying to check and see, but yeah, stock still higher on pace for its best day since January of 2022. Dan, what do you think about the action here after hours? We had thought maybe it would go down, but actually maybe it's going higher.
Listen, if you're buying this stock on Elon's guidance about the Model 2, then you should probably be neutered in investment terms. There's nothing that he has said that he has guided to in 10 years about any of these cars, any of the products, any full self-driving, any of this stuff that should lead anyone to believe that he's going to be anywhere near the targets.
Why does everyone keep believing?
I will say this. I mean, ultimately, talking about profitability for a company, I mean, I agree. He's done a lot of this. I just said that. Yeah. It's a company that at least over time is actually more than delivered on going into, call it the mass production of the idea. So I agree. This isn't a reason. I think this is short covering. I think this is a dynamic where there's been so much bad news priced into this. We knew this number was going to be awful. It was set up for a relief. But Model 2, whenever that's going to be, I wouldn't be holding my breath.
So we're up 11%. I think we went into the call, maybe we're up about 8%. Guy, what do you make this move here?
Probably continues, short of him, dropping some bomb in the rest of this call, unless it's over by now. But again, rallies in this stock for the last 6 months have been sold. This is not unlike what we've seen over the last 6 months. I think you're finding a spot not to buy it, but to sell it into strength.
All right. Well, meanwhile, there is still plenty more big tech on deck this week with Meta set to report tomorrow. The results coming as we wait for a final Senate vote on a bill that could ban TikTok in the U.S. and potentially put billions of dollars in digital ad spending up for grabs. That vote could happen as early as tonight. Options traders expect a big move in Meta when those results cross the wire. Mike Coe joins us now with a way to play the print going into Meta results. Hey, Mike.
Hi there. Yeah. So right now, the options market is implying a move of about 8% by the end of the week after they report earnings. That's actually consistent with the historical average. In fact, it's pretty much spot on, as it turns out. Today, we saw calls outpacing puts pretty significantly. That's actually been the trend over the course of the last 10 and 20 days. So it seems like the sentiment is actually quite bullish going into the print. I think one way that you could look to play this actually is by selling a put spread, so collecting money by selling the 495 puts and then hedging that by buying the lower strike 475 puts. When I was looking at that earlier today, you could collect almost $9 for that trade. That's a trade that would have been profitable about 64% of the time looking back the past 10 years or so.
All right, that is a good one. And this these meta results and what could happen potentially with this TikTok vote is really fascinating. I mean, Tim, what do you make of the possibility of this vote also in impacting the trading of shares?
Well, if you remember the day last week when we heard where Apple was actually now running into problems in China and certainly getting kicked off in terms of at least some of the App Store and the dynamics that were around their control and their censorship in China. And Meta traded down too, because the mm-hmm. discussion was that obviously people backdoored their way into Instagram, et cetera. Ultimately, the TikTok conversation is very Meta positive. Ultimately, though, this is a stock that I think is really going more on free cash flow, evaluation dynamic, the fact that they are well positioned in AI. They are one of the few that is really executing now. I think they're going to have everything good to say. They're going to be some of the best numbers in mega cap tech tomorrow.
Yeah, Karen, I mean, Meta up 40%, the exact opposite pretty much of what we've seen from Tesla so far this year. What do you make going into the print?
I like Meta. It's my biggest position. I think TikTok's already fully priced in.
Really?
Yeah. I think this has been happening in slow motion, and now we are really at the finish line. I think if it doesn't happen tomorrow, if something hit, then we'll see the stock trade down. But like to Tim's point, I think they've got a lot of momentum aside from TikTok. And, you know, the year of efficiency, I think, continues. And I say so. I like it.
When you say fully priced in, do you think that they will be the biggest beneficiary if the TikTok ban goes through?
I do.
Okay.
I don't know if they'll be sold. I don't know if TikTok will be sold.
Right.
But Meta will be the biggest beneficiary, yes.
Wow, good stuff. Well, coming up next, final trades. Don't miss the CNBC stock draft this Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern. Our own Karen Feinerman has the number one overall pick with her team, Money Machine. She's partnered with the WNBA's Brianna Stewart of the New York Liberty. You won't want to miss that. It is now time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn. Tim, what's your final trade?
I would just first like to say congratulations, Andy and Sam, and for the trade down, Walmart.
All right. Nice pick there, Tim. Or Connor, Seymour, Karen.
Yes, I'm going home with the girl that brought me, Meta. The M in my helm trade earnings tomorrow.
Love it, Dan.
Just one day I'd like to go home with you. You know what I mean?
Whoa. I'm just saying, like the girl, no, you take Melissa home all the time on the way home. That's
you'll
all
come
I meant.
Okay.
Morgan Stanley breaking out here.
And Guy Adami.
Tim gets better looking every show. Letter C, Courtney, and thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for watching Fast Money. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now. Thanks, Connor.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/fastmoneydisclaimer.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.